7:03 on a Wednesday. Halford, Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Wednesday game day tonight, for now. Canucks and Flames supposed to go at 7:30 this evening.
They better go.
Well,
I know it's a, I'm joking mostly, but it would be it'd be very appropriate if we came back to the airwaves.
And the Canucks didn't play.
I was like, you know what? We're just going to shut her down for the season.
The Habs, their game yesterday, which they looked very rested for, by the way, that was their first in 10 days. Canucks might welcome a couple extra days off. Who's to say?
I don't think they would. Healthy. I think they need to get back to playing hockey.
They're like, we're going to do what Montreal did. We're also going to punt our games further down the road. The regular season is going to go till the middle of May at this point. Yeah, so we're still waiting on exactly what's going to happen. In case you missed the news and the update, we talked about it a lot this morning. Adam Gaudette tested positive for COVID yesterday. So they've got to go through the rigmarole of second tests, potential false positives, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have Woodley on the line now, Dom? I can't see you over there.
Dom is just on the phone right now.
Oh, he's on the phone right now. So we'll talk to Kev about tonight's game. Not necessarily about the intricacies of said game, but we're going to ask him about Jacob Markstrom. Now, I think it's safe to say that the year has been disappointing. I don't know if Markstrom's been disappointing. The numbers aren't good. But we got to figure out with Kev, is this a product of Markstrom's play? The play in front of him? I mean, there has been...
Look, I thought his numbers would go up when Daryl Sutter got hired.
Right, and it hasn't yet. It's a small sample size. I think it's only 11 games, but it hasn't been great. Let's go now to the phone line. Joining us as we get the band back together, very excited, from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. It's The Morning Wood with Kevin Woodley.
Ding!
That's not it.
Oh, so close, Tom.
What was that?
Boing.
I have no idea.
Boing.
No, I know, but I can't just rip off McClatch. I have to do my own thing.
Do you understand? The boing is for the wood, though.
Yes.
What and was that is, you just played?
Do that again.
What's the pharmacist from
Mort Goldman?
Yeah.
Is that what you just played?
That's exactly what I just played.
Can you do it one more time?
Yeah.
Ding.
Ding.
So they're at the
explain.
They're at the Knights camp thing.
Yeah.
And the lady shows up.
Uh-huh. I know the scene.
Okay.
Right.
Good.
At least you guys know the reference.
He's wearing the
metal
cup.
Yes.
Okay.
Ding. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
That's not bad.
The fact that I had to explain it though.
That probably hurts it. There we go. Good you got to explain your joke, guys.
Yeah. Oh wait, Woodley's here. Oh, hey, Kev. How's it going?
I'm dying over here. I'm dying. Like Morning Wood, and that doesn't inspire Morning Wood.
I'm sorry.
We'll work on it.
We'll get there. I'm just happy to be back with you guys.
Yeah, we're happy to have you back as well, bud. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate you taking the time. If you didn't hear the preamble, I'll kind of reiterate really quickly. Jacob Markstrom, one of your tried and true lines is that goaltending doesn't exist in a vacuum. So when we all try and predict what was going to happen when Jacob Markstrom went to the Flames, it was like, well, you got to plug him into that system and the kind of shots that he's going to face in front of that team. And then lo and behold, there's a coaching switch midway through the year, so there's some changes there. So these numbers, which are not good, save percentage barely above 900. I won't even bring up the goals against because I know that's a thing. But tell me what's
because
going...
Because it's not 1984 anymore?
Right. I just ignored it. I'm learning on the job. Just tell us about Jacob Markstrom, what's gone on here over the last little bit.
Well, you kind of have two parts to the season. There's Markstrom pre-injury, and I know a lot of people, and he shot it down yesterday in a Zoom call, have sort of, you know, linked the Tanner-Pearson collision to the beginning of the end of a great season for Jacob Markstrom. Like, up to that point, and as he pointed out fairly, he did play games after that, but the counterpoint would be not well, and not really well since. Up till that point, it was the Jacob Markstrom they signed. It was the guy we saw for the past couple of years here in Vancouver. He was top 5-6 in adjusted stats for the first month of the season. And since then, he's kind of been a different guy. He's been the guy sort of tumbling down towards that Mendoza line, that 900 line. Like, it's not good right now, to the point where some people wondered if we even see him tonight, if there is a game. Like, is David Rittich, who's playing better of late, get an opportunity here? So you've kind of got a tale of two seasons, and without knowing the history of Markstrom in terms of playing through things, makes you wonder how much of this is injury related. We saw it in the bubble with the Canucks, right? Like, as much as the focus was on when he ultimately left for the final three games and Thatcher went bubble Demko, the reality was he was playing through something the entire time until he just couldn't anymore. And so this is a guy who has a history of, like he's not going to sit it out as soon as he doesn't feel good physically. He's going to play through it. And, you know, frankly, I said this, I'm on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, have been since the start of the season. I said this kind of early when he was going well. Remember, they came into Vancouver here and played him for all the games. Like, they kind of played the wheels off him and was sort of sounding some early warning signs about that, about how this guy's not going to ask for a night off. Sometimes he's a guy you have to tell needs to take a night off. And so whatever's happened here physically, you've got a different Jacob Markstrom since then. The other thing that's changed, as you said, is Daryl Sutter. And what was the one caveat we gave when they signed Calgary, and when he signed in Calgary and we talked about what that move would mean for the Flames, was that environment that doesn't exist in a vacuum thing, I loved the fit. Because one of the things he did very well here in Vancouver was he didn't give up bad goals, and they gave up a lot of grade A, but they gave up a lot. There were a lot of nights when Travis Green would come out and say, yeah, a lot of those shots were from the outside, and the media kind of guffawed, like, you know, okay, there was, but there's also a ton from the inside too, Travis. But the Flames were the same. They gave up a lot of those perimeter shots. And the one unanswered question I had about Jacob Markstrom was, how would he deal with an environment where he didn't have those, where there were less of those feeler shots to sort of get you into a game, where the grade A's didn't change, but the 99 percenters, as I like to call them, the kind that, you know, old school coaches talk about throwing pucks to the net and the goalie at the other end's like, yes, please, just warm me up for the first period. Love it. That was Carolina under Bill Peters. They just warmed up the other goalie for a period and a half and let him feel good. He's not getting quite as many of those since Daryl Sutter took over, and that's an adjustment that if he'd gone to a team like that in the first place, I would have questioned the fit. I wonder if they've changed the fit here a couple months into the season, and that's part of this equation on top of whatever happened with that injury and him recovering from it. He's getting killed right now on slot line plays, plays across the middle that force the goalie to go from one side to the other. High danger, high-quality chances, but he's like minus four goals on that. And he's getting killed on broken plays. So a lot of plays, you know, across the slot line, off legs, off sticks, deflections, things like that, where he's getting caught moving. And Jacob's always been an active goaltender, but he's getting caught moving one way and the play hits something and goes back the other. So there's a little bit of luck on the broken plays, but slot line plays surprises me. He's usually so crisp in his movement, so powerful, so explosive. The fact he's getting exploited on those is something that wasn't happening here for the past couple of years.
Hey, Kev, when you go and do Calgary radio, what's the temperature of that fan base right now? Because they're actually, like, I think the Calgary market is fairly easy relative to other markets in Canada, but they've got to be getting frustrated there. And I would imagine if the Flames miss the playoffs, and it sure looks like they're going to miss them, and they might miss them by a sizable margin, there's got to be major changes there. Is Johnny Gaudreau going to be back after what Daryl Sutter had to say? If Daryl Sutter is going to be the head coach, is Johnny Gaudreau going to be a fit there? He's only got 1 year left before he's a UFA anyway, so they might look to get something back for him, lest he leave in free agency for nothing. Giordano's getting a little bit older. Not a little bit older. I think he's 37. This was their year. You know, they were like, all right, what do we got to fix here? We got to fix the goaltending. That seems to be the number one glaring thing that we got to fix. So they signed Markey, and it was a decent bet, and it's still early in that contract. But I just have to imagine if the Flames miss the playoffs, there have to be major, major changes to that team.
Well, they've kind of gone through the checklist, right? Like it was, you're right. Like, goaltending was, they never had that sort of that guy, right? They patchworked it. Mike Smith, David Rittich, who's still there, obviously, but heading into UFA, like, they thought he could be the answer, maybe. There was sort of a litany of 1Bs that went through there. So they were going to solve that, and no more questions about the goaltending. And they didn't, you know, do anything about the coaching at the same time, and so that became a problem. So then they think they've solved that with Daryl Sutter, and you're right. Like, eventually down that checklist, you come to the core group of players, and you got to think, I would agree, that that's kind of the next step. Or the person making the decisions on those changes is the next step in Calgary in terms of Bratcher living in the, as the general manager. And so fascinating to see where this goes, because the big surprise to me wasn't just that they went out and got Daryl Sutter, but that they gave him a lot of term. And, you know, that at a time when, you know, a lot of teams are not spending, you know, I wonder if that's a decision too. Like, if that fit isn't there, whether it's Jacob Markstrom or beyond, if that's a decision you regret, if nothing else financially, because you have to sort of change your mind on that halfway through as well.
You know, I did do a bit of like reading into what the Sun and the other Calgary outlets were saying about the situation. So there's a lot at play right now. You mentioned the collision with Pearson and how Markstrom, whether it's because of that or not, he just hasn't been right since then. There's Riddick behind him. I remember Sutter saying early in his coaching tenure, this time around with Calgary, I don't pull goalies. And then last game, he pulled Markstrom after 40 and said he had made his mind up 10 minutes into the second period. And then he had that line after the game. He said, we're not giving up much right now, so it's making those saves, right? Now, I know that Sutter prides himself on kind of being blunt and direct and everything, but I feel like there's a dynamic at play here now because – you know, Ward was the coach when Markstrom came in. Now there's a different one. There's a relationship that either needs to be built or maybe isn't being built there. What do you know? What are you hearing on that front?
Well, it's interesting because his nickname is Big Save Dave, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just a nickname. Like, when you look at the statistics for David Rittich, his save percentage on high danger chances, high percentage shots, is like through the roof. And so what did I just say about Jacob Markstrom? That's what they're not getting right now. And the interesting thing is, in Vancouver, his performances against those types of chances wasn't off the charts good. Like, it was just above expected. It was in the other categories, especially the easy ones, where he just blew everyone out of the water.
And that's something that Markstrom, that's something that the easy one, someone texted it in and said, what is Woodley talking about? Marky let in all sorts of bad goals, but that's something he worked on and that's something he improved on.
Find me a bad goal he let in the last year, year and a half. Like, yeah. That was, I mean, that was, you're right. The texter's right. When he first started here, that was the biggest difference in Jacob Markstrom from the beginning of his tenure with the Canucks to the end of his tenure, was he didn't give those up anymore. That's what changed him from the guy that cleared waivers and went to the American League to the guy who, you know, was got Vezina votes last season. He stopped giving those up. So his performance on these high danger chances has never been astronomically high. And now it's sort of below expected. And here you have Dave Rittich, who's starting to find his feet a little bit. Once again, now he has a tendency to give up some of the low percentage ones, but he's great on these high percentage ones. And so as you change this environment in front of them both, Rittich has started to find his feet a little bit, started to get them underneath him, and he's outperforming on those chances. So it's easy for Daryl to say we don't give up much. And this goes back to the conversation I started this with. They're giving up the same amount of high-danger chances they were before. They're just not giving up as many of those feelers, those easy ones. And it's not just about sort of quote-unquote padding the stats. It's about being able to feel your way into a game. And again, the question I had about Markstrom in the offseason was, what does he look like in a low-shot environment? As a busy goaltender, what does he look like when he's not busy? When the team play in front of him has him sitting around a lot and then facing those high danger chances, not stopping four or five easy ones in between them. And this is a serious question. Rittich right now is playing better in that environment, and that's one of the reasons. I don't know that it was a slam dunk guarantee that it's Jacob Markstrom tonight. If you read the Sun article, you'll see there was sort of that hedge there that maybe we do see David Rittich tonight. So it's fascinating. In that we tried to look at the environment. You always got to look at the environment when a goaltender signs a big contract. But this is why I always say I would never hand out term to a goaltender, because that environment changes as quickly as you change head coaches. Yeah. Daryl Sutter's not going to, like, it's the same answer I used to get from Bill Peters, right? Because this was a similar type of environment for, like, never gave up the easy ones. When they had a breakdown, it was a grade A. Goalie hadn't seen a shot. It's not quite as extreme for the Flames right now. But under Peters, the goalie wouldn't see any shots, and then all of a sudden it was a two-on-one because they blocked everything, all the easy ones. And his answer was always like, yeah, like, but this is what we want, right? Like, what do you want me to do, give up easy ones? Like, So I fully get it, but not every goalie plays well in that environment, and this is an adjustment right now for Jacob Markstrom. Because let's be honest, guys, behind the Vancouver Canucks, he didn't really have to worry about low shot environments, did he?
No, that's very true. Kev, I think if of the teams that were expected to compete for a Stanley Cup, I think it's safe to say that Calgary's been the most disappointing team in Canada. Maybe the most disappointing team in the States has been Philly. And a lot of it is due to goaltending. What is going on with Carter Hart in Philly?
Okay, so this is a bit of a two-part. And one is, hey, guess what? Goaltending doesn't exist in a vacuum. And Carter Hart's expected save percentage, and I should couch this because new audience. I have access to ClearSight Analytics, the company run by Steven Valiquette. I get a peek under the hood that NHL teams subscribe to. I get a look at the same data. And so this qualifies shot quality better than anything else I've seen. Like, it really measures that, you know, just how difficult the shots are goaltenders are facing. And conversely, what types of chances other teams are creating and generating. You can measure offense too. Carter Hart has the fourth lowest expected save percentage in the NHL. In other words, among starters, he has the fourth toughest environment. Now, like, I saw sympathy last night. I actually got text messages, Ryan Miller behind the Anaheim Ducks, and sort of like a poor Ryan Miller. He doesn't deserve to go out this way, as I think it was Colorado, just literally, like, it was everything but the clown car music as they sort of skated circles around the Ducks. It was like watching, it was like when our beer league team gets moved up a couple of levels and you get absolutely schooled. It was like just, it was Harlem Globetrotters out there. People are like, oh, Ryan Miller doesn't deserve to go out like this. Ryan Miller has a higher expected save percentage on the season than Carter Hart. So that's part of this. The other part of it is, it was that low last year too, and he outperformed it. And nobody noticed. We noticed he was good, but the talk about how crappy they were defensively wasn't really there because Carter masked a lot of it. In his first full season, he outperformed it significantly. He was, you know, in a top 10 range, little outside of that. This year, he's well below, and everybody's noticing what's wrong with Carter Hart rather than what's wrong with the environment. So that's part one.
Yeah, in part a related story, Shane Gostisbehere on waivers.
Yeah, there you go. Part two is Carter Hart doesn't look like Carter Hart. And I don't mean like, oh, he's not making the saves he used to make. I mean, like, look at him. Put the video side by side and ask yourself, what the hell are they doing in Philadelphia? I don't know if the environment has gotten to him, if they're asking him to be like every other goaltender, like in terms of from a coaching standpoint. I don't know where it's coming from. But Carter Hart is not Carter Hart. From his stance to his setup to the way he moves, and those things are all interlinked. They changed his glove position because they felt he was getting beat. Like, you can see he went to what I would call a fingers up. So instead of his old glove position, which would be like a handshake, so imagine you're reaching out to a guy like a handshake, hands just sort of at your hips, so to speak, kind of sitting naturally, to fingers up, where all of a sudden you sort of present that hand to the shooter, almost like a stop sign, but not quite pushed out as much, like you're telling the guy to stop, but it's just sort of sitting in front of you. Like, you change that. His stance, we talked about this with Mikey DiPietro about how early on he was so hunched over at the waist that the only way for him to get to the ice was to pull everything off the puck and lose vision of it. The only way for him to move was to open up. For Carter, he's taught to sort of stay on top of pucks, but when he's so hunched over, the only way for him to do that is to drop to his knees and slide. And so now I watched a game the other night, and he's sliding across on his knees on like a 70-foot cross-ice pass. And that is, like, that's insane. What made Carter special was he would beat tough passes in tight on his skate, set and square. And now he's sliding across the ice on 80-footers and arriving outside his crease, off angle, not set, not square. And so when the pass goes the other way, he's behind and it's a backdoor tap-in. And you could look at it and say, yeah, the environment's tough. That's a backdoor tap-in, double slot line, cross ice. But I look at it and I'm like, yeah, the environment's tough, but what the hell? Like, what happened to Carter Hart? So something's up there. I don't know whether it's him and losing confidence behind all those chances. There are elements of depth where he's retreating and playing deep. He's defaulting to paddle down. Like, I don't know if somebody's showing him film of Felix Potvin from the 80s or something, or 90s. I don't know. The way he's playing net is not the way he played net coming up. like I said, the biomechanics are off, the stance is off, the setup is off. He was cutting edge in all those elements. He was ahead of the curve in a lot of those elements, and they're all gone. Now he just looks like every other struggling goaltender to me. And if that's on him losing confidence and losing his foundation, then that's on him. If he's being pushed away from his foundation, then the equivalent I would make to that would have been like a coach. Say Alexander Ovechkin in his second or third year went through a scoring slump, and the coach said, you know what, Ovi, we need to lay off the 1T. Let's try the wrist shot. That's the equivalent. His foundation is what makes him special, and I see very few signs of it left right now.
Flyers are back in action tonight against those same Buffalo Sabres that they had the huge comeback.
But not Carter. He gets the timeout to work harder. And I'm telling you, that's the other thing. And I've heard this from around the league. Like, what the hell was AV doing throwing him under the bus?
Right.
This kid's work ethic has never been in question. He is the consummate pro. Mm. On a team that has a reputation for enjoying itself, Carter's the kid who goes home at 8 o'clock to take an ice bath, internal body scans in an ice bath to see what's hurting. Mm. Like, he stretches, he rolls, he does film. Some think maybe even too much. He's too immersed in goaltending. So to call out him for work ethic, it makes me think that somebody there doesn't understand the difference between working hard and working smart, and a goaltender that looks busy versus a goaltender that's actually being efficient.
Kev, great stuff, man. As always, enjoyed this. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the game tonight, assuming it goes off. We will talk again next week.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. That's the Morning Wood with Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine.
I kind of hope Dom keeps doing that.
Yeah, you know what? It's got something. I don't know what it is, but there's something there. Maybe it's the lengthy explanation we'll have to do every time.
No, I'm not explaining it anymore.
No, I'll have to.
Why?
Who are we beholden to here? We can
exactly.
Do whatever we want.
Exactly, we can do whatever we want.
Aside from advertisers. We got lots more to get to on the program. 8 o'clock, Ian McIntyre is going to join us as we look ahead. It is game day. We are operating as if it will remain game day. So, 7:30 is puck drop tonight as I get to what you can expect. The Land Rover pregame show starts at 5:30, so 2 hours in advance. That pregame show, Dan Riccio, Sat Shaw, and Radneep Janda, a.k.a. The People's Show. They'll do their Canucks roundtable at 6:30. The Green Report, and that is Travis Green, not a recycling initiative.
Okay.
That's going to be at 7:00. Batch and Hershey have the call at 7:30. Intermissions and post with Sat. Sat does everything here.
Mm-hmm.
Does it all.
He might replace Adam Gaudette in the lineup tonight.
Potentially.
Our poll question today on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Which of the following four Canucks trade chips has the most value? Jake Virtanen, Adam Gaudette, Tanner Pearson, and Alex Edler. We'll recap the results from the poll. Discuss the poll question coming up next. It's the Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650.
On a Wednesday, Halford, Brough, Sportsnet 650. Hey, golfers! Yes, you!
That's me.
Are you listening right now? Do you golf?
Yes.
If so, I've got something for you.
Ooh.
Get Great Vancouver Golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details and to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. So you're getting back into the swing. That's a golf joke.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I am.
Don't taunt me.
I'm going to play Friday. I'm going to play Saturday.
You're fully back.
Oh yeah.
Are you a club member?
No.
You just pay per green fee every time.
The clubs aren't free, right?
No, I get that, but yeah. Wouldn't it be more financially feasible to just pay a club membership and then you just...
Yeah, he's made money.
Have you heard of monthly dues or no? Do you have much club experience?
No.
Clubs will grind you.
Right. I belong to Kensington Pitch.
Shut up now.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I think...
A card-carrying member of...
I'm too old to get like the young guy deals right. That the clubs do.
Even after they bumped it up, they made a junior membership at like 39 years old. Brough was still like,
The monthly dues at golf clubs are probably around $400 a month.
Oh, good God.
And then so if you take a vacation, in the summer, you're like, ah, I should be playing golf.
That's right.
I should be living at this club.
This is costing me a lot of money.
I think a golf club for me might be one of those, if money's no object.
Right.
And I feel like money's going to be an object.
Probably.
For the rest of my life.
But, you know, you could go to a crappy golf club.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I'd like to go to a shorts and where like they flip-flops.
One of those ones where they pay you the monthly membership fees. They're so grateful that you'd hang out there.
Exactly. They just know you're going to drink a lot at the bar.
Like, sir, this is going right back in the till. We know it. Yeah, I'm assuming you don't golf much, Dom.
I do, but clearly not as frequently as Jason does.
Jason's a very good golfer.
I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, I'm not very good. I can play.
Okay, you're a good golfer.
Aren't you like a 5 handicap?
No.
It depends on what context you're talking about. Like, if you just throw him into the general populace, mm-hmm. he'd be a very good golfer. Amongst golfers, he's good to average. I'm not good at all, and I don't like it.
You and I are in the same boat.
Yeah, but I don't like it. I don't like doing it. I don't like watching it.
Oh.
Even this right now is tiresome.
Mike doesn't like doing things where it's not like immediately easy. He's like a child in that way.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah, I break stuff. Slam clubs. The usual. Our Sportsnet 650 poll question today. Which of the following four Canucks trade chips has the most value? Now, Twitter only lets you list four. We could have listed more. For example, Brandon Sutter didn't make the list. He very well could be there. Tyler Mott didn't make the list. He very well could be there. We went with Jake Virtanen, Adam Gaudette, Tanner Pearson, and Alex Edler. Trade deadline is what? Less than 2 weeks away now. April 12th. We almost have 800 votes. Overwhelmingly, 44% say that Alex Edler has the most value. Now, we have some audio.
But will he waive? Do we do this every year? Will he waive?
We didn't do it last year because the Canucks weren't in seller mode. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we're not going to ask him to waive this year. We'll give you a year off from you telling us no.
This is very surprising that you're coming to me with this.
Yeah. I did not see this coming. Once again, the answer is no. We've got, in addition to doing everything around the station, Sat is also a Canucks insider. Is that correct? That's right. He's the one responsible for asking Edler to waive his no trade clause. They're like, you're handsome. You go do it. Maybe he'll have a different answer for you. I don't know. Anyway, Sat had some audio on Monday. The latest on whether or not Edler would entertain the option of moving. Let's play that audio now.
Because Edler, to me, is the guy that actually has some value. What are we talking about here with Pearson? It's like a third, fourth, maybe a fifth, maybe a prospect even, right? Alex Edler, he's the guy as UFA that you would get something meaningful for. And it's not a first-round pick, and it's not a second plus a prospect, but you're probably getting a second-round pick or something along those lines. And as far as any info on his front, I've just heard the same thing Irv has heard, which he's told us here on Sportsnet 650 the past couple weeks. That Alex Edler, for the right team being a contender in the right market, would waive. Now, hey, there's only a handful of those teams, and they have to be interested in him. But I do believe it's more likely this time around, if he's asked well ahead of time and the situation is right, that he might actually waive his no-move clause.
Well, the thing...
Look, why do you think it might be different this year, though?
Why do I think it might... Why do
for,
I think,
for Edler.
I don't think he will. No, I said he wouldn't. I'm like, he's just going to... He's shown no inclination to ever change his mind.
You don't believe Sat's reporting at all? Like Sat is reporting that compared to other years, this might be the one where Alex Edler actually says yes. He's obviously hearing it from somebody, unless he just makes things up. Does he do that?
Does he do that?
Dom?
This is a lot of pressure to put on a producer.
Is he a fraud?
No.
Is that what we're talking about? I think he must be hearing this from something.
Here's what I think. I think that as we go further towards April 12th, things are lining up nicely for the Canucks if they want to move him. For example, injuries are happening, i.e. Florida with Ekblad. Secondly, Nashville's played themselves back into contention. The biggest defensive trade chip a week ago even was Matthias Ekholm. Mm-hmm. Now, they might not be willing to move him because they might be making a playoff push. So those two things definitely help any team that wants to enter the market as a seller with a UFA defenseman. We just talked to Chris Johnson. You can check. Is the podcast up from the first hour already? Go check out the podcast.
Is.
You can listen to Chris Johnson, our Sportsnet NHL insider, break this down. And he's throwing out David Savard as maybe the best rental that's available. So
he's a right shot. So
right.
That would make sense for Florida, maybe.
Because Ekblad was a right shot. He still is. It's not like he lost that ability. Yeah.
Ekholm, left shot.
Yes. So what you're looking at with Edler right now is the market does appear to be turning. Mm-hmm. The question, and it always is every single year we do this song and dance, is he going to wave? Because he's shown zero inclination to want to do it before. And I think it's honestly just because he doesn't want to go anywhere. I don't think it's anything more complicated than that. He doesn't have to. He doesn't particularly want to.
Well, maybe the pandemic now, he's just getting so sick of just being in his house.
Right.
He's like, I would like to go somewhere else.
Sure.
But then you have cabin fever.
Right. And I suppose if you do get traded to a U.S. team, you don't have the cabin fever aspect because you're not quarantining for, 2 weeks, right? It's much more minimal when you go.
Oh, yeah. That's actually, can you imagine?
You know what I mean?
He's like, I want to get out a little more.
And if you want to get out somewhere, go to Florida. Everything's open. So there's that possibility out there. I understand what Sat was saying. Like, in this climate, Edler is the biggest trade asset because of what's gone on. Defensemen are always the highest value at the deadline. You can never have too many defensemen going into the playoffs. Injuries are creeping up everywhere. Some teams with bigger ones than other ones. And then, of course, the Nashville factor.
Here's another thing that could possibly be playing into this.
Okay.
Maybe Edler doesn't think he's going to get a contract offer from the Vancouver Canucks to be back next season.
Right. And he wants
he's
to
a pending UFA. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Canucks have been like, well, you're not coming back here.
I know.
Well, so you might as well go. If you want to keep playing hockey.
That is a good point. Because Siege brought that up with Taylor Hall when we had him on earlier this morning. He said Taylor Hall might go somewhere at the deadline. And because of the uncertainty for contracts and what it might look like in the summer, it's like trying on a new pair of shoes before you buy them. It's like, these are pretty comfortable.
Maybe
I
Edler,
like it here.
Maybe Edler agrees to waive if a contract extension is reached with this team, even if it's just a one-year contract extension. Bieksa kind of did a similar thing with Anaheim, didn't he?
Right. It was understood that it wasn't going to be a rental. He was going to be there for a little while.
And then they give him a no-move clause.
Yeah. He was like, this is great. That's the possibility.
They kind of screwed up their expansion draft, didn't it?
They did, very much.
Yeah.
That's why they don't have Shea Theodore anymore.
Correct.
Yeah. So that point is good, though, because that's something that the agent can kind of work on and leverage. And that would change the situation as opposed to previous years where Edler's like, why would I waive? I got another year of my contract. I like it in Vancouver. I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
All my stuff is here. That might not enter into the equation.
And I want to sign in Vancouver, even if it's a hometown discount. The Canucks, meanwhile, might be, Alex, we got to move on. We moved on from Chris Tanev last season. You've lost a step. You sure take a lot of penalties out there.
Right.
And you're one of our best penalty killers, so that kind of hurts us in that regard. We need to give opportunities to other players. We certainly can't. If the Canucks bring back Edler, I sure hope their plan is to make him a third-pairing defenseman because this is not – it's not feasible to keep giving him these heavy minutes that they give him in matchup roles. It's really hard for him, and the Canucks aren't going to be any good because of that.
Well, I look at what Boston did with Chara this year, and they moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think they kind of, without saying it out loud, acknowledged that Chara still had more to give, but they just needed to move on. Like, you know what I'm saying, right? Chara went to Washington. He plays. He's a regular contributor for one of the best teams in the NHL. So if you're Boston, you're like, well, he could have done that here. Yes, but they needed to move on. They wanted to do something different on defense, which I think is what the Canucks, to a certain degree, did with Tanev last year. It could be that Edler has more to give, and he could be a serviceable third-pair defenseman in the future for the Canucks. They just might look at this and say, okay, is it time to turn the page on this chapter?
And we're not going to give you $4 million to do it.
Right.
You know, he's getting $6 million right now. Right. At any rate, Ian McIntyre is coming up at 8 o'clock on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Ian has just written his trade deadline primer for the Vancouver Canucks. I don't know if it's a primer so much as just, hey, the trade deadline is coming up for the Vancouver Canucks.
An announcement of sorts.
We'll talk to Ian about Alex Edler and any other trade chips that the Canucks do have. I'd be curious to know about the value for Jake Virtanen, Adam Gaudette. And do those deals need to be done now anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
12 days out.
Is any playoff team out there going, we need to add Jake Virtanen to the lineup? Or especially Adam Gaudette.
Right. Yeah, teams with cup aspirations, is that going to put them over the top? And if it's not, are you trading them to those teams for peanuts because it's going to be a depth player for them? Or do you send him to an organization that maybe is looking more towards the future? And if that's the case, do you even do that deal at the deadline? Do you not just wait till the summer to make a deal like that? So there's lots to get into. Ian McIntyre at 8, what did you want to get to?
I wanted to just say that for what we learned, which we'll do at around 8:25, if you're going to text in what we learns, and please do text in what we learns,
yeah,
have WWL first so we can search that in our text inbox filter.
Yeah,
there's a new text inbox for us, and we've been having a little bit of trouble flagging these texts. So if you want to send in a what we learned, WWL.
Yes.
And then the what we learned.
Lots more to get to. Don't go anywhere. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks.
Got McDavid, Ennis, and Cassian out there. And now McDavid might be sent off. Kotkaniemi went down in a heap.
A little frustration maybe as McDavid just kind of throws an elbow.
You might say Connor McDavid gave him a rough ride. Rough ride.
I feel like barking when I listen to DMX.
You should. Go for it.
Nah.
Do it.
Nah.
Right now.
Was this the one where it was all the shirtless guys riding ATVs
yes.
together?
Yes.
Yes. Such a weird video. I remember I was covering a basketball tournament, one of the Canadian national basketball tournament, all the provincial teams played. Mm-hmm. This is way back when I worked for a magazine. And the team from Quebec, who were just all huge guys, they would come out before every game and they would play that. And they would stand there jumping in a circle and barking and like hammering each other in the chest. It just...
French?
There wasn't even a line. It was the universal language of bark, basically.
Okay.
There was no, it was just...
They're trying to get hyped.
They were super intimidating. Like, I watched them play the team. Unfortunately, the team from PEI was like, ah! What do we do? And then they lost by about 50 points. It was really intimidating. So, DMX, good job.
PEI doesn't have a strong basketball team.
They had guys. Like, they had a full team.
Mm-hmm.
But you could tell some of them, like, had just taken up the sport, right? Just the other day. And now you're on the provincial team. It wasn't a fair match.
Okay, so we played the McDavid elbow. Was that Kotkaniemi?
Yes.
And then I logged onto Twitter right after that elbow.
Oh, man.
Last night.
It was
a
thing on the Twitter.
Oh, good. Arguing about suspensions now.
Yeah. I don't think
it's going to be a suspension. It was definitely quite an elbow, though. It was a spectacular elbow.
He went way out of his way to chase it. That was the big part, right? Like multiple strides. Kotkaniemi didn't really know what was going on. And he leveled him.
Mm-hmm.
Got a 2-minute penalty. I think that should be like, I'm dusting my hands right now. That's the sound you hear. Like, that should have been the end of it. But Twitter being Twitter, now all of a sudden people calling for suspension. Bigger story, I guess, obviously. I don't know if this is where you're going to go with it, but the frustration level, right? This is something that you don't see very often out of McDavid. And that's where all the conversations, especially on social media, kind of went like, you never saw Crosby do this. And is he losing his cool? Has he reached his point?
Crosby never lost his temper in any of those series against Philly.
And, like, of course that he did. I guess the other one was, how much of a toll is this road trip on the Oilers? Because they've been gone for, I believe it's 10 days, and it was supposed to be a 5-game, 10-day trip, but a bunch of the games got kicked to the curb because of everything that happened with Montreal. So McDavid actually said after the game, this has felt like the longest road trip of all time because we've just been sitting around doing nothing in our hotel rooms. And we talked to Bo Horvat yesterday on this very program. You can go back and check the podcast to listen to the interview. But Horvat kind of said the same thing. Like, the road sucks this year.
Especially getting shut out.
Right.
On the road.
Yeah. And this point streak came to an end as well.
Where would you rank the Oilers right now?
Good question.
In Canada?
Right now, they're on pace to face the Jets in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, if you were to give me that matchup, I would take the Jets in a 7-game series. If you give me the Oilers and Habs...
For what reason? Goaltending?
Goaltending. And, yeah, I think... Also, I think the Jets...
And yet Mike Smith has pretty good numbers this year. That's a decision to make, eh?
Here's... Yeah.
For game one?
Right. Well,
Mike Smith versus Koskinen? Didn't it go badly?
Yeah.
When they went with Mike Smith?
But then it didn't go that great when they went with Koskinen.
That's true.
There's better goaltending in Winnipeg. I would say this. If you can somehow throw a blanket over McDavid and Draisaitl, which is near impossible to do.
Yeah.
But let's say in a seven-game series, they don't
go
off.
That's like saying, if you can make Bruff likable.
Let's say you keep them in check where they're not killing you. They're just putting up points, but they're not killing you.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Edmonton going to go to for secondary and tertiary scoring? I don't know. With Winnipeg, I don't have those questions because they're so deep up front. The goaltending I'd give to Winnipeg. So I like Winnipeg better than them. If you were to give me Montreal and Edmonton in a series, I'd say it's a pick 'em. And if you're going to give me Montreal and or Edmonton and Toronto in the series, I'd take Toronto.
Is it safe to say that there's only one really good team in Canada?
Yeah, the Leafs. And they're down to their third string.
And even then, you don't trust them in the playoffs.
No, because they have no history of getting it done. Now, every team that hasn't won it has no history of getting it done.
Can you imagine, by the way, and do you think it could happen? Could you see Jake Allen over Carey Price?
This year, yes. And I could say that for a lot of teams that are going, like I could see Jack Campbell over Frederick Anderson when they come back. And if the Leafs are like, this guy gives us a better chance to win. I think that...
But forget all that.
Like, no. Just hear me out.
Carey Price.
Just hear me out. I think that the blueprint for this was formed in the bubble. And I think a lot of it was what Vegas did with Robin Lehner over Marc-Andre Fleury, where they're like, it does, you know, politics aside, mm-hmm. history aside, legacy aside, and I know it's a shorter legacy for Fleury in Vegas than it is for Price in Montreal, but we're just going with a guy that's going to give us the best chance to win. The schedule's condensed. There's going to be a lot of games. We'll probably use both, but if this guy gives us a better chance than that guy, we're going with it. So if Jake Allen's playing better,
I'd be shocked for game one.
But over the course of a long playoff series, I could see it happening. I mean, look how much Montreal has invested in this season alone, right? Like, are you really going to say, well, you know, at the end of the day, Carey was our guy because Carey's been our guy?
Yes, you could say that.
But mm-hmm. I think you could also say we brought in Jake Allen or paying him close to, I think he's $4 million a year
mm-hmm.
to do exactly this. Right? Be a 1B if our 1A can't go. It'd be very interesting to see. Speaking of goaltending, it's one of the many storylines going into tonight's game. Canucks, Flames, 7:30 puck drop for now. It's almost 8 o'clock in the morning. We still don't really have any news. I imagine that we won't get any sort of official statement until we're off the air at 9, and then you're into the Sir Tool show
mm-hmm.
from 9 to 1. So you'll probably get your update then. But still, coming up, we will talk to Ian McIntyre of Sportsnet about tonight's game, about the matchup, this Markstrom situation. Could you imagine if Markstrom doesn't get the start tonight, if they go? Is that a real statement from Daryl Sutter putting David Rittich in against Markstrom's old team?
He's already called out Johnny Hockey.
Yep.
That was funny.
That was really good. That was a good line.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
That reporter was looking for some sort of flowery... he was expecting Sutter to be like, oh, Johnny's been a very talented hockey player. To reach 500 games in the NHL is a real milestone.
That guy was planning.
He was planning
to write a story on Gaudreau's 500th game being like a landmark.
And whoever was writing that story was like, this is going to be such an easy story. I'm just going to get this quote from Daryl Sutter about Johnny Hockey. What a great story. This undersized kid that a lot of people said would probably never make it in the NHL. He's too small. Now he's playing his 500th game in the NHL. Daryl, please add to my flowery story here.
I just want to go golfing. Just let me finish this story.
Yeah. An experienced reporter could have banged that piece out mm-hmm. in like 45 minutes. All right, done. And then all of a sudden, Sutter, do we have that audio? That was just unbelievable. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, we can come back with that on the other side because we got to go anyway. So we'll come back, play the audio that we're talking about with Daryl Sutter and Johnny Hockey. They, of course, are facing the Canucks tonight. Ian McIntyre to preview the game. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is your home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650.